In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Friday, October 21st, 2011 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And two fantastic experts in the studio with me for this week's edition of the Federal News Countdown. It's a bee show. It's all bees today. It's Jonathan Brewer, the IBM Center for the Business of Government. Good to see you, sir.
Thank you. Good.
And it's Al Berman, the president of Jefferson Consulting. Al, nice to have you on the program again.
Nice to be here, Francis.
Good stories on the countdown. A lot going on. There are a lot of things we don't know a lot about, and we'll start with...
Number three!
The third most important federal news story as chosen by Al Berman this week is Ed O'Keefe's story in the Washington Post. The headline is Government Charge Card Abuse Could Soon Be History. And as the details started to emerge about this bill that's coming out of the Senate now, it seemed to me the possibility at least existed that we could be headed right back to where we were before this whole charge card thing came about.
Well, I hope not, Francis. I put this... article in the mix because, you know, if there are success stories in terms of innovation and customer service, the charge card has been one of those things that's been touted over the last 20 years as something that's really made a difference. It's been a huge benefit to program folks who can buy small things and do them quickly. It saves a lot of money because when you used to do this by paper, it was 5-6 times more expensive than you could do it with the charge card.
Mm-hmm.
And it also helped out the contracting staff who were lots of work, and that was a lot of work that then could be moved out of their shop and into someone else's. Of course, this is kind of typical. These are the sorts of things, though, that show up in the newspaper. It's
mm-hmm.
Somebody using it to buy Jeeps or jewelry, or
right.
And they have a list in this article of various things that people have used it for.
All the stuff they shouldn't have bought.
All they shouldn't have bought. And, you know, what I'm kind of pleased to see, actually, is that this legislation is not saying we're doing it in.
Mm-hmm.
It's saying we're going to make sure we do as much as we can to make sure it's being done well and right and people are trained and you're going to be monitoring it. And my hope is that that's going to be enough and the solution isn't going to say, let's take it away, because that's a common response to when you run into problems. Not do in the folks who are take action against the folks who are abusing it,
mm-hmm.
but rather do in the whole thing and take away the benefit for 99% of the people who are using it well.
Well, my fear when I first saw this was, is this bill, if the bill requires more oversight and it requires more people to sign off on purchases, to some degree that defeats the purpose of one of the purposes, at least, of the charge card in the first place, which is if you're buying commodities, you can do it quickly. You don't have to go through a schedule, and you can get what you need and get on with your life. If more people have to sign off on these things, that kind of takes away that element of being able to move swiftly.
There have been problems with a number of agencies, and all of the agencies have people in place who are responsible for reviewing what people are spending their money on
mm-hmm.
and doing that sort of thing. And that's a reasonable kind of oversight from my perspective to be doing that. So my hope is it's not going to go where you're suggesting, Francis, that it's going to actually be something that says we're going to make sure that we've got the right procedures in place to do it well, but we're going to keep using it.
Al Berman, story number three in the countdown is from The Post. The headline is Government Charge Card Abuse Could Soon Be History. Jonathan Brewer, your story number three, also from The Post. The headline is Super Committee's Lack of Progress on Debt Reduction Raises Alarms on Hill. And as I read this, I thought maybe the problem, at least the perception, is not so much lack of progress, but that we just don't have any idea whether they're making progress or not. Is that fair, do you think?
Oh, I think it is, and I think it provides a nice contrast to Al's story. With charge cards, of course, bring transparency to the process, and here you've got the Hill getting active on that count. Here you've got a case where there's no transparency and where the Hill is seemingly stymied in its ability to deal with the chores that the supercommittee has been assigned. And that's beginning to get everybody worried. This story's been rolling around in Roll Call, National Journal, and it's mirrored in a number of stories in many departments that are talking about consolidations at the Justice Department, buyouts at the Agriculture Department, So again, the fear and paralysis this is bringing to town is worrisome.
Where I find it particularly interesting is in the vendors that I talk to, and they're saying people are just telling us we're not going to do anything until we have a better idea of where we're going budget-wise. And, of course, that's being held up. Now Congress is going out here again, and so we're going to be butting up against November 18th when the current CR expires with nothing. And so it appears at least that we're going to be back in this mode of the third week of November down to the last two or three days or last day before we have another one.
You know, I don't know a budget officer in town who isn't spending most of his time now hiding and hoarding whatever resources he or she has.
Yeah.
Because, again, they're going to have to operate their programs and departments throughout the year. The secretary and the White House are going to be calling for spending in various areas, and they're eventually going to get hit with some cuts. So they're just hunkering down, trying to save every dollar they can at this point to maximize their flexibility.
Is it more the idea, you think, of the potential cuts, or is it more the idea of not knowing what's going to happen next?
Well, that's one and the same, because one of the prospects here is that come November 23rd, if there's no action, we're going to have an automatic set of cuts across the board,
mm-hmm.
and agencies are going to get a number.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be given a number they're going to have to work to. And that's going to be pretty drastic in most cases and very hard to absorb.
If you had to decide, if you had to choose, would you say the super committee comes up with something for Congress to vote on, or would you say they punt and make Congress enact those cuts that you're mentioning?
Well, there was a good sign this week that the so-called Gang of Six went in and met with them behind closed doors. And unlike some of the others who've been meeting with them, the Gang of Six has looked at this problem as a whole,
mm-hmm.
and tried to balance out all the cuts and all the choices. What they've been getting otherwise, though, to this date at the Super Committee is, if you will, every special pleader, the health care groups, the defense groups, and everybody going in pleading their own case, as they should, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm optimistic in the sense that the Gang of Six, which has tried to iron this out in a bipartisan fashion, gave them their sense of things as well, and hopefully that's helping them frame the issues in a way where they can move forward and break the impasse.
Jonathan Bruhl's story number three in the countdown is from the Washington Post. The headline is Super Committee's Lack of Progress on Debt Reduction Raises Alarms on the Hill. You can read that story and all the stories that Jonathan and Al Berman have chosen on the countdown this week on federalnewsradio.com on the in-depth page. Story number two from both of my experts this week when we continue on the countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
You won't find our products in computer stores, but the technology we provide helps make life better in America. We're Lockheed Martin, the leading provider of information technology to the federal government. From software, to systems, to cybersecurity, to cloud computing, Lockheed Martin IT solutions help government agencies operate efficiently and effectively. Supporting the people who provide services to citizens is all a question of how, and it is the how that Lockheed Martin delivers. The information systems we build help the nation's air traffic managers keep the skies safe and law enforcement keep the streets safe. They support the agencies that make sure benefit checks are accurate and every citizen is counted. Who are we? Lockheed Martin, the leading provider of information technology to the federal government. Helping our government provide the services that Americans rely on is all a question of how, and it is the how that Lockheed Martin delivers.
AT&T's commitment is clear. That's why we're announcing that with the planned merger with T-Mobile, AT&T will begin bringing 5,000 jobs to America from overseas. We will invest $8 billion more and deploy the next generation of wireless broadband to nearly everyone in America. This investment will create as many as 96,000 American jobs. We're ready to invest in America. AT&T.
The Washington Capitals are bringing the excitement of hockey to local classrooms with Caps at School. Caps at School is a free online curriculum-enhancing teaching tool for grades 1 through 6 that uses the sport of hockey to teach science, math, language, art, health, and physical education. Teachers and students participating in Caps at School can also win visits from Capitals players and Slapshot teachers. For more information on how to enroll your class for free, visit capsatschool.com.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Monday's Federal Drive. We'll be broadcasting live from the Executive Leadership Conference in Williamsburg. Tune in for interviews with some of the top technology leaders in the federal government. Plus, the National Science Foundation steps up its game for its Radio 360 project. Those stories and more Monday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Headed to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor, Federal News Radio can be heard crystal clear on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. It's the same great station, just on an added frequency. Get the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Hear exclusive interviews with the movers and shakers in the federal arena. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown this week with Al Berman and Jonathan Brule, and the Federal News Countdown up to
number two.
The second most important federal news story of the week from Al Berman is from the Federal Times. The headline is Senators Seek Data on DOD Contracting with Alaska Native Corporations. This ANC issue, this one in particular, has been around for a long time, but with this, it seems to me like it's going to continue to be around for a long time, don't you think, Al?
It's a bit of a golden oldie, but and I picked this out, Francis, because, you know, this is the typical kind of thing that actually shows up on the front page of the Washington Post. When you talk about acquisition and contracting, you're not talking about some beautiful innovation that somebody has come up with or how the government has saved, agencies have saved millions of dollars by coming up with creative approaches to doing things. Here, it's the $16 muffin, or it's this kind of stuff. And of course, this one, when you look at the amount of money that you're talking about, of course, this is all alleged, so I can only see what I read in the papers on this, but that's a lot of money that's being put at stake. And it's unfortunate, and it tarnishes the whole process. I think it's hurtful to the people who are doing a good job there. And one of the things you always have a debate about on acquisition is, why don't we just get the best deal, period, and you have all these other goals. We want to help people. We want to help disadvantaged folks or these Native Americans or Alaskan Native folks. And, of course, this doesn't help at all when you get that. The bottom line is that the Congress is sending a request to a number of senators, sending a request to the Secretary of Defense, saying how many contracts have you been doing with sole source that don't have justification and approval, and saying, what are you doing about it, and how are you making sure that these kinds of problems don't continue to occur? So, but again, it puts the spotlight on people doing bad things in the acquisition world.
The acquisition world, of course, Jonathan, is the only place where the spotlight always seems to wind up on people doing the wrong thing when the right thing happens an overwhelming majority of the time. And it's...
Doesn't make news.
Well, that's true. It doesn't, but it's, I guess... I can only imagine that it's frustrating for, especially in this case, the Alaska Native corporations that are doing it the right way and seeing stuff like this going on. And as Al mentioned, Senator McCaskill, Senator McCain asking DOD to review all sole source contracts awarded to ANC before the 2010 authorization law took effect. So there's going to be contractors who haven't really done anything wrong who may get their businesses poked into a little bit.
Well, not surprising. I think that's always a problem with sole source kind of work. The whole idea of the whole principle that the federal acquisition rules are maximum open free competition. And so when you have a sole source arrangement, there's always room to wonder why and to question why somebody else couldn't get a shot at that and perhaps do a better job.
And I would certainly agree with Jonathan on that point. I mean, one of the reasons that you look at competition is to avoid these kinds of things. And one of the reasons why you have source selection committees or groups that make decisions is so you don't put that decision in the hand of an individual. So, mm-hmm. you know, frankly, the notion of stacking these kinds of selection committees, I find that's pretty hard to envision, that there's a lot of that stuff going on because you put a number of people together just to try to make sure that the process stays as fair as possible. So I would certainly agree with Jonathan that the emphasis throughout ought to be on competition, not on sole source.
Do you think you can envision a time where we get to a point where we say, you know what, sole source contracting is just more trouble than it's worth, or will there always be a place for it somewhere?
Well, you know, even when the Competition Contracting Act was passed back in the mid-'80s, there are a number of exceptions that were put into that for urgent reasons, for national security. There's some general provisions as well, and it makes sense to give yourself some waivers.
Mm-hmm.
But I think on balance, those waivers should be used very judiciously.
Al Berman's story number two in the countdown is from the Federal Times. Senators seek data on DOD contracting with Alaska Native corporations. You can read the whole thing on federalnewsradio.com, and you can hear Jonathan Brule's story number two on the Federal News Countdown in just minutes from now on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll be right back.
What is the military health system's quadruple aim? How is DOD ensuring it has a healthy and fit force? And what is DOD doing to reduce costs without sacrificing the quality of care delivered? Join host Michael Keegan on the next The Business of Government Hour as he explores these questions and so much more with Dr. Jonathan Woodson, Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs within the U.S. Department of Defense.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does three decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit capitalareafoodbank.org.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit MyVillageGreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Enzymatic Therapy and Nordic Naturals.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the Departments of Defense and State. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
Heavier young, sooner dead. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. For an overweight or obese young adult, getting your weight under control might not be something you want to put off. At the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, June Stevens saw that when she looked at data from 1987 to 2005.
Being heavy at age 25 had consequences for mortality. People who were very heavy as 25-year-olds did not live as long as people who were normal weight.
Stevens also says the risk of dying was higher as the amount of weight for a person's height, the body mass index, went up. But she says young adults should be able to reduce the risk by getting their weight down to a healthy level. The study in the Journal of Adolescent Health was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
How can federal agencies drive performance in a cutback climate? What are the latest best practices for maximizing efficiency in federal programs? Join HUD Secretary Sean Donovan and hundreds of federal managers to learn how to achieve more with less at Excellence in Government, the Efficiency Imperative, on November 17th in Washington, D.C. Register today to save 35% at www.excelgov.com.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown is the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected each week by two people who are experts in the world of the federal government. Jonathan Brule of the IBM Center for the Business of Government and Al Berman of Jefferson Consulting, my two experts this week. And Jonathan Brule, your story number two is Jason Miller's story on federalnewsradio.com. Headline, CIOs still not meeting spirit intent of the Clinger-Cohen Law GAO fines. Was this a surprise to you that the CIO structure is not quite what it's supposed to be?
Not really. I think a bit more disappointment, but they're actually following the path that the CFOs set 20 years ago, mm-hmm. With the Chief Financial Officers Act. And here you have the CIOs 15 years after the Clinger-Cohen Act in much the same situation, where they're not quite organizationally placed the way the law may have expected, and really pushing things through the way that the spirited members who put them and enacted them in the first place thought was going to happen. Mm-hmm. So no huge surprise, but again, a bit disappointing.
Do you see a connection between the high number of IT projects on the high-risk list and the fact that CIOs are not doing the direct reports that they're supposed to, and that CIOs don't have the budget autonomy that they're supposed to?
No, again, no surprise. Management, no matter how important, just doesn't quite get the same attention in this town, mm-hmm. and doesn't get the same attention with top political appointees. The secretaries and deputies in particular are dealing with external issues up on the Hill and frequently deal in policy matters. That's where the action and attention is. So these matters don't get as much attention, and therefore the lack of direct reports and the lack of attention on the execution of these programs is a pretty common matter.
Al, just structurally, not even necessarily an IT matter, but just structurally, I would think if somebody came to you and not only said this is a good idea, but codified it in law, that you have a certain part of the budget of your agency that you can at least hand off management to somebody in your agency who's an expert in that area, I would think that would be attractive to the heads of the agencies.
It may be attractive to the heads of the agencies, but in terms of the folks who have responsibility for the programs, I think it's been a continuing pull and push kind of an issue. You have the CIOs who are seen as overall looking at IT purchases, but those people who are in program offices who see IT as meeting their mission needs, there's always been a struggle between both of those groups as to who's really in charge. And it's funny that Jonathan should mention in this article, because I know that the Government Accountability Office is now going through a review very similar to this on the chief acquisition officers, because the SARA Act, the Services Acquisition Reform Act, had placed these individuals in a similar kind of a position. Let's mm-hmm. raise them up, let's have them as political appointees, and let's give them some more authority so that they can really have a place at the table on big issues. And generally, a number of agencies haven't put them in place. Number of agencies have this as a, one of many duties as assigned, the same kind of point that was made in this article on the CIO. So it's not just unique to the CIO community.
Mm-hmm. And it's a common problem because of the whole range of chiefs. You've got chief acquisition officers, chief human capital officers, and Congress most recently has now legislated chief operating officers, mm-hmm. basically to be the chiefs of the chiefs, I mm-hmm. guess.
Right.
But the idea of bringing some coordination and cohesion to the operation of these really mission support functions is terribly important, and getting them to work closely with the mission parts of the agency, which is where the cabinet secretaries often place more of their attention,
mm-hmm.
that's been a challenge for a long time, and we really don't seem to have the formula down yet.
Either of you, do you have thoughts about whether this is happening intentionally in that we don't want to do it that way, I don't like doing it that way, or is it more neglect where it's just not something that's been a tremendous priority at the agencies and they haven't gotten around to it yet? Al, you have any thoughts on that?
I think on the CAO position, there is some real a knowledge base for people doing that kind of job, and to find somebody from outside and bring them in who have the expertise to be able to perform that well, that's a challenge to agencies. And you have senior procurement executives who are senior career people who have been doing this job for some time. So I think in some respects there's a recognition that there's somebody there who's handling these things and they're probably placed where they'd like to be placed. I think you do have the question about how many people can you really supervise.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're seeing these like chief management officers or undersecretaries for management like in DHS mm-hmm. where in effect, as Jonathan mentioned, you're trying to raise up that group so that you have an individual that you're working with. So I'd say in some cases it's neglect. Jonathan, what's your thought?
Well, the other problem is a matter of who has the money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the CIOs don't always have any control over budget.
Mm-hmm.
The program dollars are out with the assistant secretaries in a particular policy or program area. And right away you've got some competition for who's calling the shots and who's really going to really call the play there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, there's a tension, and therefore for some of the CIOs to be sidelined is not too surprising.
Yeah. The example that we hear all the time when it comes to the money piece of it is VA, Roger Baker. And the sense that I get just from watching, not necessarily from speaking to him, but just from watching what's happening, is he seemed to go into that agency and say, okay, if I'm going to have responsibility for this money, then it's not going to get blown on my watch. And he's been killing programs or improving performance on programs to such a degree that the administration has said, well, we need to do this all over government, and everybody should be doing it this way. Is there a possibility that seeing that example, that it will get replicated, or is this a cultural thing that you think is embedded at agencies that it's going to be really hard to change?
Well, certainly culture matters, but I would say the other thing that matters equally is leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And at VA, you've got a leadership team second to none. General Shinseki is about as interested in management as anybody could be. He's just driven to make that place a high-performing department.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a strong team with a very strong DEPSEC and a lot of support with a top-notch CIO like Roger. Not surprising, in other words, that you're seeing that kind of action there. That's hard to repeat
mm-hmm.
in too many other places.
Yeah.
And leadership matters an awful lot, too.
Roger mentioned one time that he briefs the secretary every morning at 8 o'clock. That's how engaged Secretary Shinseki is in what's happening right. in what Roger's involved with. And General Shinseki considers him not to be the IT guy, but to be mission critical to be able to deliver the services they're supposed
and
to deliver.
And that, of course, was part of the vision of the Clinger-Cohen Act.
Mm-hmm.
So you're seeing it in play there, but we are not seeing it in quite such a form elsewhere.
So what's the solution? I mean, if it's codified in legislation and agencies still don't do it, how do you get them to do it?
Well, again, you've got to have CIOs worry about more than just IT stuff. It's not just buying.
Is part of it the CIO's fault for not taking the initiative and saying, hey, I'm supposed to be in on this conversation?
Well, again, that's the leadership. If the secretary and deputy want to pigeonhole them in the corner as someone to buy and maintain IT, then that's going to be the scope of their responsibility. If they see him as a change agent who can get into program, it's going to be a different matter.
Mm-hmm.
That's my view as well. It seems to me that the leadership of the agency, the secretary and the deputy secretary, have to recognize the value that these individuals bring. and want them to be there, want their advice, and want them to have their hands on the big issues that are affecting the agency in their field. And so a lot of it becomes personality as well.
Mm-hmm. Jonathan Brule's story number two in the countdown is Jason Miller's story headline, CIO still not meeting spirit or intent of the Clinger-Cohen Act, GAO fines. And you can read that on the in-depth page. Also, I'll mention that the author of that report from the GAO, Valerie Melvin, was on my program yesterday, and I talked to her about it. So we have that conversation and the report linked up on the in-depth page, too, at federalnewsradio.com. On the Federal News Countdown, we're up to the number one story of the week, as chosen by Al Berman and Jonathan Brule, the most important federal news stories of the week in minutes on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Where did you leave it? Where could it have possibly gone? It's frustrating because you used to have your motivation with you all the time, and now, ugh, that's okay. We'll help you find it. First, let's find your reason. You know, your reason. What's that thing that makes you want to live to an age where you can say whatever you want to whomever you want and somehow it becomes charming? Next, find your thing. What is that healthy thing you actually love doing? There's got to be one, right? Finally, go find your partner. Who's the ping to your pong? The downward to your dog? Who'll keep your butt moving and vice versa? Find all of those things. We're pretty sure your motivation will magically appear. But if you're still having trouble finding it, try looking really, really hard in the mirror. We're Kaiser Permanente, and we're here to help you find your motivation to thrive. Visit kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Are you a Washington Capitals fan?
Who, me?
Do you live for wearing that red jersey?
Well, yeah, I do.
Then you're going to love the D.C. Lottery's new Washington Capitals Scratcher. Not only is there a top prize of $50,000...
What?
There's a second chance drawing to win one-of-a-kind prizes, like 2012-2013 regular season tickets.
Oh, that's awesome!
Or a chance to be a Cap for a day with a VIP experience.
Man!
Like to win season tickets to the Caps?
Yes!
Play the new Washington Capitals Scratcher.
Woo!
Only from the D.C. Lottery. Lots of people win.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Martha Doris is the Deputy Associate Administrator in the Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies.
The web world is not leveraging what the contact center world has to offer. If they start integrating across government, we could look at providing more of the basic answers to questions more centrally so that agencies could spend their limited resources on the more difficult questions that are program specific.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown is the selection of the three most important federal news stories of the week by two people who are experts in the world of the federal government. This week, my experts are Al Berman and Jonathan Brule, and we're up to
number one.
The most important federal news story of the week is chosen by Al Berman, is from Washington Technology, and the headline is Expect Anemic Spending Growth Through 2017. It's Tech America's research about what we can expect in federal government spending for the next 5-6 years. Again, based on where we've been over the last couple of years and the conversation, especially in the last 9 months that we've seen on the Hill, probably not too much of a surprise here, but interesting nonetheless to see how it's codified.
Yeah, and I probably could have picked a bunch of articles this week, Francis, that have basically the same point, mm-hmm. that things are going to be tough down the road, and agencies are struggling with how are they going to contend with these kinds of budget cuts coming up. And the one place that you ordinarily look to see growth and well, where you'd see folks saying this, in spite of everything, this is the place where we need to continue to spend money, mm-hmm. is IT, because of the benefits of technology and the way that technology affects so many different parts of the federal government and all different agencies. And so to a degree, maybe it's not shocking, but it is a little disconcerting to see the kinds of projections that are coming out. Again, these are projections. They're by experts, government and industry who use their crystal balls. We all know how good crystal balls can be, so we certainly can't necessarily hang our hat on these. But to show virtually a 1% growth in the civilian agencies and a negative growth rate in defense, I think that does not bode well for the technology industry.
You mentioned crystal balls, and I always go back to about 10 years ago when a person who was fairly well known in the financial management world, not in government, outside government, wrote a book called Dow 30,000. And it's obviously not.
Haven't quite made it yet.
I mean, someday. I hope I'm alive if that ever happens. But, it's not going to be anytime soon. Jonathan, do you think on the agency side and then on the vendor side, I want you to separate them out. Do you think people are starting to understand that this is a new normal, that this is not just a year or two or three pinch, that this may be a dramatic change in the way the government does business for the foreseeable future?
I hope so, but frankly, a good deal of people are still deer in the headlights. They're kind of frozen,
mm-hmm.
and they're not, because there's so much uncertainty and still some latent optimism in many places that, well, we're doing this sort of mission, and it's super important, and therefore it's not going to get hurt. And, of course, everybody's putting on a good face and making that argument because they don't want their missionary to get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, I think the prospects of change and some dramatic cuts are very high. And so there are people out there also who are quietly trying to figure out what the game plan is to react to this in a sensible way and deal with it in a strategic way, actually, uh-huh. rather than just take the cuts and apply them almost in a salami slice way.
A friend of mine that's been in this business for a long time used this analogy the other day, actually said, think about it as a piece of paper. He said, I still see and talk to a lot of people at agencies that think that we're trimming around the border a little bit when 5 years from now, when we look back, the bottom third of the sheet of paper might be gone. Well, and that's how seriously, that's why I always ask, I wonder if people, what people are thinking about the realities that we may be up against.
That behavior has been the learned behavior
mm-hmm.
and the smart behavior for the last 30 years. And there were marginal changes and marginal cuts, and you dealt with it by pushing back some travel and training or right. postponing something around the margins.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that indefinitely, and with the prospect of big changes, that won't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so anybody who's going to take that behavior is probably going to die by a thousand cuts.
Yeah.
Rather than stepping back and taking a more strategic view of changing the way they do business in substantial ways,
mm-hmm.
whether that's technology or changing the direction of their mission, but making major change so they can maintain performance in the face of large cuts.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's going to have to take place for the smart folks to survive in this.
Just on that point, you know, I remember way back under Jimmy Carter and the Carter administration, there was an effort to take a look at why are we spending money? What do we need this money for? Let's do a zero-based budgeting approach to see, you know, what do we really need? And essentially what happened was there was a lot of trees died in part of that process. But nevertheless, it still was what's at the margin. People mm-hmm. would still kind of accept the base as being, well, we're going to need to do these kinds of things. And so it's that small percentage at the edges that one focuses on. It's very hard to get someone to say, we have to do things radically different or we're not going to do things, mm-hmm. period. And so it's not going to be an easy thing to pick up.
The reason that I'm not as optimistic as maybe some folks are is because I still hear a lot, both agencies, vendors, and even on the Hill, the fallback position is always, well, the big problem is the entitlement programs. And if we cut this budget by this much, it doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. And that's true. I'm not arguing with that. But that strikes me at least as a little bit of a cop-out. Is that unreasonable
well,
on that part?
It's not only a cop-out, but it's unrealistic. The savings in the entitlement programs only begin to accumulate and realize a significant savings over time.
Mm-hmm.
And you actually have to start phasing those in so that the savings in the first few years are negligible. It's only when you get 5, 10, and even 15 years out where the savings become huge and really necessary. And so in the budget game at this point for what the super committee has to undertake and the Congress deal with is cuts this beginning in 2013 and 2014.
Mm-hmm.
To do that, you can't expect the entitlements to yield you the savings you're going to need. So it's going to turn the knife back onto the discretionary programs, which is, again, where most of the federal employees and programs operate.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, in the short run, the big cuts and big changes are going to have to occur on the discretionary side, and that's going to be very painful.
Well,
so we may have to front-end load those until we have time for the entitlement savings to come online.
That's been the argument, the one that I was mentioning, that the unions have used when it comes to the super committee considering cuts to pay and benefits for federal employees. They didn't cause it, so you shouldn't take it out on them. And it's not anybody's fault except Congress's. They're the ones that appropriated the money poorly for the last, 40 years, I guess. But it's got to come from somewhere.
Exactly.
All right. Al Berman's story number one on the countdown this week is from Washington Technology. The headline is Expect Anemic Spending Growth Through 2017, and you can read it and all of our countdown stories on federalnewsradio.com. Jonathan Bruhl's number one story of the week when In-Depth continues on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Do you know us? You count on our technology every day. The office elevator that takes you up and down efficiently. The jet engine that gets you home safely. The fire suppression system you hope you never need, but know is there. You count on things we make to protect you from harm, and even to keep you cool and comfortable. Our technologies are a critical part of your everyday life. Yet many people don't even know who we are. Our name is United Technologies. We are Carrier, Hamilton Sunstrand, Otis, Pratt & Whitney, Sikorsky, and UTC Fire and Security. Six businesses united as one powerful company. In fact, we are one of the largest manufacturers in the United States, which likely makes us the biggest company you've never heard of, even though you depend on us every single day. United Technologies. Get to know more about us at UTC.com.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
Defense Secretary Leon Panetta and Attorney General Eric Holder are expressing their opposition to a move to prevent terror suspects from being tried in federal court. The two of them sent a letter to Senate leaders saying the Republican measure would deprive them of a potent weapon in the fight against terrorism. They also claim it could lead to the risk of terrorists escaping justice and putting other people in danger. I'm J.J. Green.
We have a capsized boat, two people in the water.
Every day, EADS North America builds and supports helicopters for the Coast Guard, Army, National Guard, Navy, and Customs and Border Protection.
Rescue swimmer is in the water.
EADS delivers helicopters that save lives every day, including those bright orange Coast Guard helicopters you see patrolling our nation's capital.
We got them. We're heading back.
EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
Your new Cocker Spaniel is waiting to meet you, and you don't have to travel very far. This weekend and almost every weekend, Oldies But Goodies Cocker Spaniel Rescue holds at least one adoption show in the greater D.C. area. Find out where we'll be this weekend by checking out CockerSpanielRescue.com. Stop by to meet the many homeless Cockers of all ages who are looking for their new home. These dogs have already been spayed or neutered and have all their shots. For more information on adoption, fostering, or volunteering, visit CockerSpanielRescue.com.
How can federal agencies drive performance in a cutback climate? What are the latest best practices for maximizing efficiency in federal programs? Join HUD Secretary Sean Donovan and hundreds of federal managers to learn how to achieve more with less at Excellence in Government, the Efficiency Imperative, on November 17th in Washington, D.C. Register today to save 35% at www.excelgov.com.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, the Federal News Countdown. This week, the selections by Jonathan Bruhl of the IBM Center for the Business of Government and Al Berman of Jefferson Consulting. And Jonathan Bruhl, your number one story of the week is from the Wall Street Journal. And I got to tell you, I just love this story. It's headlined, Dear White House, Please Tell Us the Truth About E.T., And I don't normally read from the stories, but I have to read from this. When the White House promised to answer citizen petitions on the most pressing problems of the day, it may not have had extraterrestrial life in mind. More than 10,000 petitions have poured in since the new initiative was announced last month in a bid to bring government closer to the people. The White House has promised that any petition meeting a threshold for a number of signatures will get an expedited hearing and an official policy response. Stephen Bassett wants to end the truth embargo, or what he believes is the government's deliberate decision to withhold what it has long known about the existence of extraterrestrial life. And I mentioned during the break, you go through this article and you read some of these things, and it's like you're reading The Onion. I mean, the things that people out there are thinking about and are their number one issue are just mind-boggling.
Well, this was a front-page Wall Street Journal report earlier this week, and it's about a new White House initiative called We the People. And, Francis, you do not need to sleep in a tent in Lafayette Park to get your word known.
That's
you don't
right.
need to chain yourself to the fence in front of the White House. You and any 13-year or older individual can submit a petition to the White House on a White House webpage, and it's much easier now for you to exercise your constitutional rights in this digital age to petition your government. And what's simply remarkable is the top 10 list of petitions, as you suggested, are simply remarkable, from legalizing and regulating marijuana, which on the Wall Street Journal article earlier this week had received 57,000 petitions. I looked this afternoon, and it's up to 70,000 petitions. So between Monday and now, they've gone up another 20,000. Abolish the TSA. Edit the Pledge of Allegiance.
Now, wait a minute.
Crack down on puppy mills.
Before you get too far, though, the TSA one, read the whole title of that petition, because it's not just abolish the TSA.
No, it's abolish the TSA and use its monstrous budget to fund more sophisticated, less intrusive counterterrorism intelligence.
Now, what does one have to do with the other? How are those two connected at all? That's what blew my mind about this. First of all, it was the fact that five of the top 10 most signed petitions have to do with legalizing marijuana. Certainly there are more pressing national issues than we have that we have at this time, but
of the 202 petitions that were filed by earlier this week, not one mentioned President Obama's jobs plan. And they're not dealing with the massive deficit, they're not dealing with two wars, and they're not dealing with high unemployment. So there are a number of other issues that are very much on the minds of Americans at this point, or at least Americans over 13 who are filing these petitions.
I mentioned Stephen Bassett, the truth embargo ET guy, the Roswell guy. This story says he decided to post a petition as soon as he heard about the opportunity and immediately sent a link to his 10,000-person email list. He posted to six Facebook pages and his Twitter account, and the petition now has more than 9,500 signatories, making it the 20th most popular. Don't people have better things to do?
The second most popular is calling for an investigation for the prosecution of a former kosher slaughterhouse executive who's spending 27 years in prison on 86 financial fraud charges. That's the second most popular petition.
Oh, my heavens.
Maybe it's like a flash mob for internet junkies or something. I mean, you kind of.
So it's going to be very interesting to see how the White House contends with all this, because, again, there's enormous interest stewing on some of these issues, and it's going to take some work to.
Yeah, I mean, this,
a response.
Yeah,
and,
this is serious business, and it doesn't appear that the people who are responding to this are taking this very seriously or very thoughtfully. Here's the third most popular petition. Forgive student loan debt to stimulate the economy and usher in a new era of innovation, entrepreneurship, and prosperity. Now, again, what does the fact that a student no longer has student loan debt mean as far as he or she being able to be more innovative, entrepreneurial, and prosperous?
Well, individually, I'm sure those 30,000 who have submitted their petition would be a lot more prosperous. But interesting development and really unprecedented, and it's an idea that came out of the 2008 Obama campaign, And they've had it under development for quite a while and just now have released it. And they're stirring up quite a bit of interest. It's a fascinating development.
Is it possible, Al, that we just that this might be a case of just too much transparency and too many opportunities for people who aren't really connected in any other way to connect in a way that's not necessarily productive?
I think in a lot of these things, these are noble ideas because give people a chance to have their say. Let them ask things of their government. Let the government get back and respond to them on what it's doing and why it's doing things. But there's also got to be a recognition that people do have day jobs in the government who are doing a lot of serious business. And all of a sudden now, there's going to be a lot of effort, presumably, being put together by people responding to these kinds of questions. And both Jonathan and I spent careers at OMB. You know, maybe OMB is going to have to coordinate those responses now across. Can you think about that, Jonathan, as a task?
Well, certainly you're going to want the response to be consistent with administration policy, so, and someone's going to have to vet that in that respect.
Presumably OMB, I don't know if they're ledge guys or who, they're going to have to be figuring out, well, is this a Commerce Department question or a NASA question?
You can't
question?
Just give this stuff
How
to
do we
interns.
Respond?
And some of this, though, the crackdown on puppy mills, nobody's in favor of puppy mills, but I'm looking around at the landscape of the issues that the administration and Congress is dealing with, and it's sad to say puppy mills is not real high on the list. There are bigger things that we need to worry about as a country. Unbelievable. I always love having you bring my attention to these kinds of stories and get me all riled up, Jonathan.
Keep you up to date on what's going on in government.
And I wanted to hear the truth about E.T., but we didn't get it from this article, unfortunately.
Well, and see, there's a lot there. Go to Roswell. Just start asking questions.
Okay.
See how that works out for you. Gentlemen, it's always a pleasure to have you on the Federal News Countdown. Jonathan Brule's number one story from the Wall Street Journal. Dear White House, please tell us the truth about E.T. And it's all on the Internet anyway, right?
Absolutely.
There's plenty of extraterrestrial stuff there. Jonathan Brule, the IBM Center for the Business of Government, and Al Berman, Jefferson Consulting. Thank you both for being on the Countdown this week. I'm back in hour number two of the program in just a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.